This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite is sponsored by Cray and Intel. The new Cray XE30 supercomputer, powered by Intel Xeon processors, delivers scalable performance for the most demanding computing challenges. For more information, visit www.cray.com/ownXE30.
This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry.
NVIDIA acquires Portland Group.
And Australia boots up Petaflop Super.
Hello and welcome to HPC Wire Soundbite for August 2nd, 2013, available Fridays on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Addison Snell with Intersect 360 Research, and subbing in for the vacationing Nicole Hemsoth, welcome back to the program my previous podcast partner, Michael Feldman, now with Intersect 360 Research. Welcome back to the podcast, pal.
Hey, it's great to be back on the podcast. I kind of missed this.
Yeah, this is fun. I get to talk to you all the time now. We haven't done a podcast together in a while. And this is a fun one to have you on the show with me now, because this is a big story in an area you know a lot about. Why don't you dive into telling us about NVIDIA's acquisition of PGI?
Yeah, this was big news this week and a little bit of surprise, I think, for most people. I mean, we know NVIDIA and PGI work together very closely on the GPU compilers and other work. But yeah, NVIDIA decided to buy them outright. Now, they didn't release the terms of the agreement. They bought up the group. It's a rather small group. It's like 30 people, but they bought all the technology, and they're going to move the people over, and they're going to run it as a subsidiary of NVIDIA now.
Yeah, this strikes me as an important announcement here and a strong move for NVIDIA in HPC. It reminds me of Intel's acquisition of WAM Cloud when you were dealing with another, you know, smallish size company that had a brand that was a lot more important in terms of mind share and the work that it's doing, belied the size of the company, the smaller size of the company, especially because what we're looking at with accelerators and the future of processing here, a lot of this is going to come down to the software work. And for NVIDIA to incorporate PGI, which is well recognized throughout the HPC community as this strong compiler company, I think speaks volumes for NVIDIA's direction here.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is a very strategic decision that NVIDIA's decided to make here. And yeah, I would say, you know, even comparing it to the WAM Cloud Intel thing, this is more important to NVIDIA than WAM Cloud was to Intel in that sense, because this is basically their retrenching their software stack for their hardware, and at least for their HPC hardware, the ones we're most concerned with. And it basically doubles up sort of the technology that they can offer now in-house for their HPC GPUs, and then eventually their ARM-based processors.
Yeah, absolutely. An important component to that announcement, of course, is we ask the question, what's going to happen to the x86 work coming out of Portland? And they say that's all still going to be supported. But, you know, you have to wonder if you're then the Portland group inside of NVIDIA, I think the least it does is reprioritizes where's the work going as you bring in GPUs, you bring in ARMs. Of course, x86 has to be part of the equation, or you don't have a complete compiler set. But it's going to put all of those architectures on even footing.
Right, right. And you do have to wonder. I mean, x86 is their competition in a lot of ways, and will become more so once they get their ARM server chip on the market. It's hard to see sort of a path in the long term for NVIDIA to sort of keep the x86 product portfolio active or nearly as active as it's been for PGI recently. Although, you know, right now, of course, you can buy a CUDA compiler from PGI that will actually map to an x86. So there's sort of that advantage for the customer side that you can have a CUDA program that you can also run on an x86 platform, which has some advantage for NVIDIA as well. But yeah, you got to think NVIDIA is all about GPUs and ARMs. They're not an x86 company at all, and they're not, doesn't look like they have any plans to be so. So that's still TBD, and we'll see that play out over the next few years, I think.
Right. Furthermore, people might ask how much share this is, and this comes right out of our published middleware reports, out of our site census surveys that we run through the user community, and Intersect 360 research finds that Intel has a 25% share of mentions of compiler vendors or the source of the compiler, and Portland Group has 10%. So that's NVIDIA picking up really what's the biggest independent named processor vendor. Now there's GNU in there, there's open source in there, there's a long tail behind Portland Group, but Portland Group has a reasonable chunk.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, we've sort of danced around the main reason that they acquired this, but I think we have to look that they looked at this as a strategic value to their software, their total offering. I mean, they want to be, I think, more like what Intel is doing. They offer their own software stack, their own software tools, and I think NVIDIA at some point decided they need more of this technology in-house. I mean, they offered the CUDA environment and compiler, but they didn't have a Fortran compiler in-house. They didn't really have a C compiler in-house that had this OpenACC directives around it in-house. So I think they looked at the landscape and they realized they needed a more complete software solution to compete effectively in where they are, especially vis-a-vis what Intel's been doing with Xeon Phi and their software.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I thought one of the more noteworthy subtext to the announcement was just the tone of how NVIDIA refers to itself now. The language that was in their announcement, when they referred to their own company, they talked about NVIDIA not as a GPU company or as a graphics company, but as a processor company. And they talk about their own product as processors, which is a more general term that, to me, is designed to line up more directly against Intel and say these are processing elements that are part of the machine. Now, if you're going to be in that game, you're right on. You need to say what's the software component and how are we working with that. So Portland Group is a really key acquisition here.
Yeah, and I think they've been moving in this direction for a while, but it is surprising to see them actually buy a whole technology like this. But again, I mean, in retrospect, now I think it looks logical to a lot of people. It'll be interesting to see it go forward, especially as like we said, they move into their Project Denver ARM server products and then see the compilers come on board for that, because it's sort of a done deal. I think that there's going to be a Fortran compiler for that, and it's going to be done vis-a-vis this technology.
A strong acquisition from NVIDIA buying PGI. Let's take a quick break from a sponsor, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about a new supercomputer booting up in Australia.
Need scalability across the performance spectrum? The Cray XC30 supercomputer family delivers on Cray's commitment to an adaptive supercomputing architecture that provides both extreme scalability and sustained performance, leveraging a robust processor roadmap, high-performance interconnect, and flexible network topology. Users can configure the exact machine to meet their specific requirements today and also remain confident that they can upgrade and enhance their system to address the most challenging multi-petaflop application demands of the future. To learn more about Intel Xeon processor-enabled Cray supercomputers, visit www.cray.com/ownXC30.
So we're back, and yeah, the second interesting story of the week, or one of the interesting stories, is the new Ryzen computer at Australia National University in Australia, in Canberra. It's a petaflop computer, actually 1.2 peak petaflops, that's been on the top 500 list for a year now, but it's now actually running. It's running production codes, it's up and running for them, and it's basically the first petaflop computer in the Southern Hemisphere. Now, I think it comes a little bit under a petaflop because in Limpac, but basically at a peak petaflop, it's the largest supercomputer in the whole Southern Hemisphere right now.
Yeah, this is a fun one. So this is the Ryzen supercomputer at the National Computational Infrastructure, NCI, facility at ANU in Canberra. As you said, it was on the top 500 list previously, but I think this is one of these deals where a lot of pre-installed computers can be on the top 500 list, and that wasn't even at its peak configuration yet. I think if they ran it again now with all of their cores, they would probably clear a petaflop. But the announcement is that it's now open for business. It's fully installed. It's running science codes. And the main purpose of NCI is to do ocean modeling predominantly, in particular in its interaction with climate modeling. The name Raijin for this supercomputer coming from the Japanese god of rain and thunder, so it's appropriate to the weather and climate modeling, and it's Japanese because this is a Fujitsu Primergy cluster.
Right, which is a little bit unusual. Not a whole lot of Fujitsu clusters around, but it decided to...
I don't know. We've seen a bunch of them near the top of the list. If they'd gotten this in a different year, Fujitsu might have had the most powerful computer in the northern and southern hemispheres.
Yeah, but it is a Sandy Bridge, so it's pretty standard technology, Intel Sandy Bridge, and it's Mellanox InfiniBand, so it's a pretty typical cluster now. And actually, I mean, that's sort of part of the story. It's you get a one petaflop supercomputer, and it's a typical cluster now. It's sort of down in, like, what is it, number 27 in the list now, so it doesn't even make top 10 anymore. But certainly a petaflop gives this this institute a lot of power, especially for climate modeling, which, as we all know, takes a lot of flops to do these models now, and especially at the granularity people want. So, I mean, it's an interesting buy for them, and it's an interesting buy for Australia in general. Australia is a country that I think is maybe more interested in climate modeling than some. They've had this, you know, drought flood climate even before it sort of became popular because of global warming, and I think they're very interested in sort of hedging their bets and finding out how it's going to affect, you know, this country. I think they're more susceptible than maybe even other countries as far as the climate goes. So
It's definitely interesting. I love it any time a supercomputer goes in and we're able to talk specifically about the application, specifically about the scientific research that's going to be done on these systems. And there's a good write-up in HPC Wire this week, including quotes from Andy Hogg, who's one of the associate professors at ANU and one of the researchers who's using the machine. There's a link, not only quotes, but a link to a short video where he talks about some of the applications they're running on this system right now, including one I hadn't really fully appreciated, which was modeling the nutrients aspect of the ocean and how it contributes to phytoplankton bloom, which, of course, has an impact on global warming. If you've got algae and that's it's eating a lot of carbon dioxide, there's a lot of the processing of carbon dioxide to oxygen happens with plankton in the ocean. Also has impact on the biological ecosystem of the ocean, which you can also model.
Right, and one thing they mentioned, I think, in some of these articles about the system is that Australian scientists didn't really have access to a system of this magnitude before for research like we were just talking about. So now they do. I mean, I think the second most powerful system was significantly less powerful. Powerful system, I think it was 800 teraflops, but this gives them more of a petaflop class supercomputer that they were missing until now. So there's going to be a lot of researchers in the local research community there that will now have access to it, whereas before they had to basically beg, borrow, and steal and go to other countries in some cases to run their models.
Yeah, we were kind of quizzing ourselves on other Southern Hemisphere supercomputers as we were getting into the pre-show. I was proud of us that we thought of where most of them were. Of course, Australia's got a couple of others, and then in Brazil you get systems of a substantial size, not only from Petrobras, the oil and gas company in Brazil, but also INPEI, which is essentially the Brazilian Space Administration akin to NASA in the U.S., or JAXA in Japan.
Right. Yeah, I think between Australia and Brazil, it looked like they had the lion's share of the Southern Hemisphere supercomputers, at least the ones above, 100 or 200 teraflops. So, yeah. But, Australia, I think, has five in the top 500 now, and Brazil's got three.
Going big down under.
Going big, yeah. And so we'll be looking for research coming out of that, and it'll be big, big good news for Australian scientists, and so congratulations to them.
Well, Michael, thanks for filling in this week. I myself will be out next week, but you'll have Nicole back in the chair. And I'll look forward to coming back later this month.
Okay, have a great vacation. We'll see you back on the other side.
Great. Thanks, Michael.
All right.
This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite is sponsored by Cray and Intel, the new Cray XC30 supercomputer, powered by Intel Xeon processors, delivers scalable performance for the most demanding computing challenges. For more information, visit www.cray.com/ownXC30.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite. Got a question or comment? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.